new job didn't entail a lot of ICANN work, so he was likely not going to be very active in this stuff.
It's possible. I got an email from him where he said that he may be able to do it. So.
Well, that's great. Hopefully.
I think he's working for News Corp now.
Can you speak a bit louder, please?
David will continue, for the conclusion of this task force, and then the BC would determine what changes, if any, were made for any future task force, of course.
That's great. So he's in it for the long haul, then, huh? Well, that's good. Okay, so we have at least one BC rep here. We have three IP reps, one ISP, one registrar. I guess Jordan and I are technically neutral. Is there any other registry rep that's on? No? Okay. Any other ISPs? We don't have anyone from the non-commercials, right?
Right. And we have Thomas and Wendy from the ALAC.
You asked that ISP's Maggie is on from the ISP.
I'm sorry?
You asked about whether anyone from ISP constituency was on. Maggie is on.
Yes, okay. All right, well, I guess, Jordan, you think we're ready to get started?
I might give it another minute or two, just given that we're missing two, well, really one. If you were to be biased from time to time, then. But we're missing at least one whole constituency at this point.
Hi, this is Tom Keller. Sorry for being late.
Okay, Tom, we're just waiting a minute or two, just to see if anyone else joins.
Okay.
We've actually had regrets from both of the non-commercial representatives.
Oh, I guess we shouldn't wait for them then, huh?
Well, there should be three because Kathy Kleinman is also a member.
There's only two representatives, right? Unless there's an alternate?
Well, that's just in one of the... My understanding, and I didn't see the emails involved, is that Kathy has been replaced by Mark Schneiders, and he's unable to attend today.
Right.
So neither Milton nor Mark Schneiders can attend today.
Okay, I didn't realize Kathy was... We do have three IP reps on this call.
One of them has to be an alternate, I guess.
So we'll leave it to you three to decide amongst yourselves. Okay, so I guess we have everybody that we're going to have. And thank you, everyone, for joining the call. And I apologize for the August break, but it seemed like it was very difficult to get a lot of people together during August. There was always going to be a time where there was at least one constituency completely not represented, if not more than one. So it's now September, and we're all ready to work, I know. Sorry. And so we're ready to start regularly scheduled meetings. And unfortunately, neither Jordan nor I were on the council call this past week. And I'm not sure, Marilyn, did you want to start with a quick summary if who is was discussed and what was decided there, if anything?
This is Barbara. I can speak to that. I gave a very brief update on the fact that the meetings were resuming again, meetings, and that we had developed this chart to use to sort of detail our work. And that was really the extent of the update.
Okay.
So Barbara, we don't have any
We don't have any further
direction.
Or anything
like that. Okay. Great.
Okay. Well, I thought what we would do then is the agenda for the call basically is to spend a little bit of time going over that chart, just to make sure people understand what it is, what the purpose of the chart is, and just to make sure that they understand what's on in the chart itself. And then we would take some time to discuss a little bit more about the subgroups that we had talked about on the last call, get some volunteers for each of these subgroups, discuss the schedule and how the subgroups are going to operate, and then set a time for regular calls for the larger group. And so that's pretty much, I guess, the items that we wanted to discuss. Is there any questions on those? Anything anybody wants to add?
Beth, this is Steve Metalis. We in the intervening time, we've had a proposal circulated to the list from Maggie on a somewhat different approach. So where would that fit into the?
I would think that would fit into the discussion on the subgroups, since that's kind of what it was geared towards.
Well, this is Maggie. I think it would actually, I would ask that we take a minute or two to discuss it before, because I guess what's confusing in my mind as to the subgroups is that I personally wasn't crazy about the idea back, I don't know, it was last year sometime when we broke into the different task forces. But now, having found that we need to combine one and two, it seems like we're going backwards by, again, breaking out into different groups. So I'm a little confused as to the efficacy of doing that and whether there isn't, in fact, a better way of just, you know, pouring through the issues that remain at Task Force 1 and 2.
Yeah, and Jeff, it's Marilyn, Jeff and Jordan. I have to agree with that. I've looked at the I don't support the subgroups at all, and I made that clear before. And when I look at the work we need to do, we would be duplicating work. You know, I think sometimes people think that policy can be developed like engineering standards can be developed. And it just doesn't work that way in policy. There's too many overlapping and interdependency issues that have to be taken into account.
Yep.
Well, I think, and Jordan, feel free to jump in. I think once we understand the role and function of the subgroups, I'm hoping that your concerns will be alleviated. I think really the role of subgroups is more for efficacy because I think since there are a number of issues, it's not very productive to have everyone responsible for every item. Ultimately, all you know, the subgroups will report their findings to the their initial thoughts and whatever milestones they've reached to the full group at multiple stages. So it's not as if the idea was to create these subgroups. These subgroups develop complete policy, you know, and 2 months later, 3 months later, they come back to the full group and say, this is what we've done, thank you, we're done. I think the role is really just to split out the work, and you're more than welcome to serve on more than one subgroup if that's what you want. But I think these are discrete enough items that it would be better for efficiency's sake to have just people focusing, contributing different items to subgroups, bringing the subgroups together at regular intervals, every couple of weeks, you know, for example, to discuss the progress and to discuss any findings with the full group, and then go back and do some more work if required. Otherwise, what's probably going to end up happening is we'll have these calls of 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16 people.
Hello, good morning. Tony Harris joining.
Good morning. Make that 17 people. And so, you know, I'm not sure how productive it is to work in those full groups on every single item in every single call to discuss every single thing. So that's really the my idea of the subgroups. Jordan, do you want to add to that?
Sorry, someone want
to... I do. And I want to speak to both Jordan and Jeff as the co-chairs. You've heard from three of the constituencies that we have concerns about this. And what I just heard you doing, Jeff, is say it's a fait accompli instead of saying, as the co-chairs, Our job is here to facilitate a work program that all participants can buy into and support. And I'd like to take that last approach a bit further, if we could.
Yeah, I think, Marilyn, that we do, we definitely want to to take that approach. I think that we're getting a little distracted from. I think actually it would be helpful to perhaps start off as we imagined in the agenda to work through the decision tree just to get a sense of the issues and the approach imagined by the decision tree before we start to talk about a specific work plan to try to tackle those issues. But I think you're right that we ought to consider the viewpoints of all of the members of the task force in developing that work plan.
So if we could just
David Maher joining.
If we could just take that approach and work through the decision tree and then leave open how best to achieve the work program and get consensus on that, I would be very satisfied with that.
Yeah. So let me suggest that we do actually start with the decision tree and then segue into that. We have, I guess, two proposals at least out on the table. One in the format of the subgroups that the chairs have proposed, and one is the maybe Maggie could flesh out the details of her proposal as well when we get to that next topic.
Okay, anybody else have any thoughts on that before we go forward? Okay, Barbara, did you want to lead this discussion, or did you want Jordan or I to do it? But Barbara's the one who actually drafted the chart.
I can go ahead and start off the discussion. The chart is basically a reproduction of work that we started doing in KL at a meeting where, with Bruce's sort of taking the lead, we began to map out what it would look like if we actually began to implement some of the, chose to implement some of the recommendations in the TF1 and TF2 documents. And basically it becomes a decision tree. If you make this decision, what are the steps involved in it and how do you proceed forward? What are the questions that have to be answered, the issues that have to be resolved? And, it allows you to sort of map out where you are in the process. So it begins, if you will, at the top with the current state. All data is available for anonymous public access. There's port 43 web-based access, and bulk access is out of scope of the discussion of the two task forces involved. And then for TF2 progress, we focus primarily on the one issue that everyone seemed to agree there was support for, which is greater conspicuous notice to registrants of the current policy, whatever the current policy is determined to be, and consider defining a reference implementation, which is how Bruce referred to it, for conspicuous notice, and assess whether parts of the implementation should be standardized, that is, explicitly included in the policy specification. How do current contractual requirements relate to national laws on privacy was a secondary issue that also related to this and required further study.
Barbara, this is Steve Metallic. Can I ask a question now?
Sure.
You have that under a branch called Task Force 2 Progress, but the Task Force 2 did not ask this question. Task Force 2 made a recommendation that a procedure be adopted so that registrars who believe that they are encountering a conflict with the national law can, you know, have a path resolving that, and ICANN is involved and so forth. So where does...
Yeah, the language came from our discussion in KL, so if you'd like to change the language, I'm happy to do that.
Okay, well, I mean, I guess and this gets into Maggie's proposal as well. I think that was one thing that came out of Task Force 2, that where at least within that group there was a consensus that there seemed to be support for the idea that it would be good to have this procedure, and I think that is potentially something that we could deliver in a fairly short order. So I would hope that that would be one of our objectives, to work on a procedure for resolving these conflicts when they arise.
Do we actually have to figure out that procedure? Wouldn't that be even part of a new PDP? I mean, we're just putting forth a suggestion of what we should do and have a little bit of policy guiding around that, but that should be all we should be doing in that task force.
I don't know that that's the case. Tom, why don't we work through what we're going to be able to do? We really cannot not do anything as a task force. We do need to develop some consensus policy. But maybe we leave the question of what we can do in these task forces until we figure out how much work or whether we are
You're breaking up a little bit, Marilyn.
Sorry. I was suggesting that maybe we ought to go all the way through this and then go back and figure out what policy this task force can recommend and where we recommend a new PDP.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Steve, I'd agree with that. I just wanted to make sure that was on the table as one of our potential options.
Sure. Yeah, I just want to say that we really discussed the subject very, very long in Task Force 2. I mean, we came up with a recommendation, and I think that's something we should all have a second look at it and not really break down into subgroups again where we discuss the whole thing all over again. So that is really what I would consider as low-hanging fruit. Even other people have different ideas about that.
Yeah, I think, and Tom, one of the goals is of this combined task force is not to go over things that have already been worked thoroughly in the earlier separate task forces. So I think, you know, obviously the goal should be forward progress, if that's possible. So, Barbara, did you want to go on?
Sure. So the two recommendations that came out of TF2 were treated as one subgroup, and then the more substantive recommendation having to do with tiered access arose in both groups, and so we treated that as a separate grouping. And again, going from top to bottom, the basic data for purposes of contactability were assessed to belong to Tier 1, and I guess I need a suggestion here. Do you want to follow through each sub-branch as we get to it and then go down, or do you want to just go down and then come back to the ones that...
I would recommend just following the branch to the end.
Okay.
To show.
That's fine. Okay, so with basic data, the contactability issue, it can remain public and anonymous, doesn't matter who sees it. The working group needs to clearly recommend what information should be included in that sphere. And then, of course, the work would branch off from there. Full data, that is, for purposes of accountability, would be assigned to Tier 2, and someone needs to be accountable for what happens with the use of this domain name. Identify the requester of the data would be another option. And again, these would have to be more fully developed. So the basic question becomes what falls into each set of data, and TF1 made a suggestion for how to distinguish the data, which basically is realized in item 1 and 2 above. And then there's some approaches to how to address the issue of who maintains this data and who maintains access to the data. You could go with a centralized whitelist, that is, some kind of user agreement with a license for multiple uses. How questions that arise from there are how would this scale, who maintains it and operates it, who manages enforcement of the license agreement. You could go with a distributor of the whitelist, which is that each registrar creates a whitelist and permits access. And from that, you also get individual use access. With each registrar creating their own whitelist and determining access, you have a trust. You have to develop some kind of trust model for sharing accreditation, or choose not to, and then it becomes every registrar making their own determination. And how cost-effective is this kind of a model? And then Bruce asked the question, can we do some combination of both centralized and distributed? And so we'd have to explore what that might look like. What work is required for identifying the requester becomes a separate set of questions. And they are questions that apply to any of the models, whether we go with a single centralized list or a distributed list or some combination of the two. You need to have some method of logging the request, how to conform with national privacy considerations on collection of information on who is requesters, log the reason for the request. Do users requesting data on behalf of third parties need to identify the third party? And how to prevent retrieved data from being passed on to other parties? So once you've logged the request, you have this question of notifying registrants. Do you do it immediately or after time? Do you provide the information on request to the registrant, and is that an immediate or after some time if there is a suitable reason for a delay? And you have issues with registrant contact in the reseller chain. And actually, this question of how to deal with all these issues regarding resellers becomes a more interesting one when you look at enforcement. So I think we need to keep that in mind as we go through this whole thing.
Barbara, I have a question.
Yes.
You read that as though you assumed, or it was written as though there's an assumption that if there is a whitelist, there will always be, that there's agreement in the enforcement about having a notification of registrants process. Is that what you meant to imply? Or were you meaning to present those as two, will there be a task for? Will there be a whitelist, and if so, what kind? B, if there is a whitelist, will there be notification of registrants?
They are two separate items in the sense that they track differently for the work that needs to be done. But I'm presuming that if there is some kind of access to information that is other than public and anonymous, that we will need to explore the issue of notifying registrants when their data is accessed.
The staff is assuming that, or you're assuming that based on what you read from our contributions?
The staff is assuming it, and it was put forward from what was in the recommendations.
It's in the recommendations, but it hasn't been agreed to.
Many of these things haven't yet.
Okay, that's fine. That's what I was just trying to understand, is how you were presenting it. Thank you.
Yeah, no, none of these items have achieved full consensus by any means, except perhaps the very first one.
Yeah. So the way this is laid out, and I can't look at it on my.
Oh, okay.
The way this is laid out, you are presenting it in a way that we would examine question A, and then we would go on to question B.
You wouldn't have to do that. I think that it's laid out in a way that says you could examine these things separately, or you could choose to examine them together. There are issues for each that need to be worked out independently And yet there's also these sort of fundamental issues that need to be worked out for each of the suggestions.
Okay.
And so, you know, there are advantages to go
okay.
in their direction. That's
thanks.
I think what the layout is meant to imply.
Thanks.
Okay. And then at the very last chain of what work is required for identifying the requester is the ICANN or the registrar or the whitelist maintainer could maintain a log for statistical or oversight purposes. Council could define the appropriate measurements and data to be reported on. And then the questions arise, you know, for what use, to what end, how do decisions based on measurements get fed back into enforcement or change rules or change policy, and that there's much more discussion that would have to be involved with that issue and actually with many of the issues. That is the chart as it currently exists. And Marilyn did raise a good point, which is that this is not meant to predetermine how these issues are dealt with. It was really meant to just break the issues down into chunks that where you could see what work would be involved in pursuing a given line of reasoning or a given line of decision-making.
Right. This is Jordan. I would just add, I think that the benefit of having this chart is that it does give us some sense of the right questions to ask at each stage of the process, and then assume, you know, given the answer to that question, you know, what the next sort of question that follows up as a result is. So it's sort of to give an outline fairly far into the future of the work as opposed to determine what the answers to those issues is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I would agree.
Right. That's why there's a lot of question marks on this as opposed to a lot of answers.
Right. It's really meant as a thinking exercise. If you decided A, then these are the questions you'd have to figure out for B, and so on. So it's basically a lot of hypotheticals and what the next step would be if you decided that initial thing. Now, there may be other questions that go along with this. So we didn't mean this chart to be, this is the be-all, end-all. This is just kind of the issues that we all came up with, that, you know, Bruce had led us to think about in KL.
Yeah, so we certainly welcome feedback if people have it as to additional changes or edits to the chart. And they don't necessarily have to be made on this call.
Right.
Well, Steve, can I offer a comment here?
Sure.
One thing that I think was very helpful to have Barbara walk through the chart. I think I understand a little more clearly what it's aiming at. I was a bit confused about the fact that I saw the same question at two different levels in the chart. For example, in the, I don't know how to describe this, in the fourth column to the right, one entry is the working group needs to clearly recommend what information should be included in Tier 1. And then also in the third column to the right, the previous stage, it says question, what falls into each set of data, which is basically the same question, isn't it? So, and then...
Right, they were restatements of the same question that had arisen at two different points in the.
Okay, I wasn't clear whether it was supposed to be read from left to right or from top to bottom. That's my question. So.
Right, and I think unfortunately with this kind of a model, it there are overlaps.
Right. Yeah.
And
I think
so, yeah.
Point Marilyn made earlier. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Now, again, this is not meant as a suggestion of how we definitely need to approach these, but it was more just a way to think about all the questions involved. And we had discussed kind of this concept on the last call, and through the last call, we came up with three discrete items. And again, I don't want to call them subgroups for reasons we talked about earlier. But the three discrete items that we had discussed of pursuing further, or that we had discussed ways of breaking things out, are kind of reflected in the first two items in the third column, I guess it is, where it's on here saying, consider defining a, conspicuous notice to registrants of current policy. And then the other one about that we discussed about how registrars would approach any kind of conflict with their national law and how, what steps they would take and those kinds of issues. And the third is kind of the overall idea of tiered access. And that kind of brings us to Maggie's proposal, in which Maggie basically... Maggie, do you want to just go over your email?
Sure. Essentially, I just think that in the interest of moving ahead as much as possible and you know, kind of, I guess, approaching the low-hanging fruit, I think starting out as a group, in my opinion, with the approach on what would constitute conspicuous notice, not necessarily, you know, detailing it down to the font size and things like that, but just some general principles, and then moving towards, sorry, lost my train of thought for a second, after the conspicuous notice to discuss what happens in the event of a conflict. I know that was brought up a lot, I believe, by the non-commercials, that in some instances there is a conflict between national law, and that's fine. I just think that we need to have a specific procedure in place, that it needs to have some review by ICANN staff and that sort of thing. And then going on to the tiered access, which I think is going to be probably the most time-consuming portion of our work, and just to make a comment about Milton's email, I don't think it's appropriate really to hold the two more readily available or readily answered questions hostage to everyone agreeing that tiered access is the absolute way to go or is definitely going to work without doing some further policy work and discussion on that. So I would just say that to start out with things that are more readily answered and easier to work on just seems to be the most efficient way to do it.
Jordan, Jeff, I'd like to get in queue to comment.
Okay, great. Marilyn, anyone else want to speak to this topic? Okay, it's all yours, Marilyn.
You know, we might actually be able to do a bit of parallel processing on tiered access by assigning some work to outside people who need to inform us of things and then have reports scheduled to come back in while we are working on conspicuous notice and a procedure for dealing with conflicts with the government's privacy laws. That way we could have some parallel processing. For instance, in tiered access, I think we actually are going to have some expert input. There's going to be a significant cost to implementing change across the registry or registrar systems, and implementing tiered access is going to assume that those costs are going to be borne by the registry or registrars. I don't know that that's a good assumption. I don't know that the assumption of where the community is right now on when they would be undergoing adoption of new standards, et cetera, anyway. But some things of that nature could probably be reported back to us by people we identify as experts who could do some work in the background while we're doing other work on these other two issues.
Yeah. Marilyn, this is Jeff. I would argue, I agree with that. And I would also argue that experts would probably be needed on the other subjects as well. So I don't think we should limit experts to just tiered access. I would think in all of them, you know, as just an example, for conspicuous notice, it may help to have legal advice on what constitutes conspicuous notice in contracts in general in the EU or in North America or in Asia. I would argue that that may be beneficial, certainly with privacy or what happens in the event of a conflict. I would argue that there's certainly there certainly would be experts that we could probably think of that, that we could call on to help us with all of these.
Are you, Jeff, are you assuming we're going to pay the experts?
No, I would hope to get volunteers, just as we are volunteering our time. And I could probably find some attorneys in North America and the EU that would certainly come in and talk for a little bit about conspicuous notice. But hopefully we can work on volunteers.
So your proposal would be that the task force would agree to try to identify experts, and then various task force members, and would all of us would contribute suggestions, and we'd come up with some folks who might agree to do it pro bono, and then we could schedule briefings by them.
You make it sound like a court case, Marilyn.
No, I'm just trying to make sure I got the procedure down, because I think that's probably right, but I think finding neutral experts in some areas is going to be a challenge, not in all areas. But the point of the role of experts is to give us advice, not to do our job for us, right?
Correct.
But you were supporting the idea of perhaps we could figure out some of the work that needs to be done on tiered access, launch that, and then go to work on these other two issues simultaneously.
Thomas here. Could I get into the queue, please?
Sure. And just to clarify, I'm just throwing that out as a possible idea, and want to hear from everyone else in the group as to that.
Okay.
So, Thomas, anybody after Thomas?
Yeah, this is Maggie. I'll get in.
Okay. Anybody else? All right, Thomas.
I guess I need some clarification as to what Marilyn actually suggests here. Are we talking about hearing experts on feasibility before we even know in detail what we want to do? That is, are we again going down the road of talking about feasibility before we even have a proposal? That, to me, that would sound not very constructive. I would suggest that we first attempt to get a proposal together, or call it a rough draft or whatever, and then talk about whether that proposal is feasible or not. If there is no defined proposal, there is nothing people can really talk about, but it's a great way to waste a lot of time for everybody. That would concern me.
That's something I would agree to, that there should be a proposal before we evaluate it any further.
Jeff, can I respond?
Sure, and then Maggie.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be difficult for me to commit to the BC to say that there's a single proposal, because there's going to have to be an assessment of feasibility and options before we can have a firm proposal. So if we could agree that we were going to examine different options, lay them out, and then have the experts advise us on the different options, I would be fine with that. But I think it's going to be very difficult to get to a firm, hard proposal lacking the kind of information. And just for instance, I share the concern that Thomas and Tom have raised about wasting time, but I also share the concern about going in a direction that ends up in a huge unfunded mandate for the registrars, and they're unable to agree to it, and we've gone off in a direction that isn't feasible.
Well, I agree on that, but at one point of time, we really have to decide whether we want to make more inquiries in the direction of tiered access or not. And if we talk about tiered access, this group has to decide, at least to a certain amount, how this tiered access should look like. And then we can go with a proposal and ask experts whether that's a feasible idea or not, and what options they see to make it work. So the whole thing is a little bit technical as well, so we have to approach it in a more or less technical way as well.
Let me jump to Maggie. Did you have a point on this, or?
Yeah, actually, I guess based on what I thought Marilyn and Jeff were suggesting, I don't have a problem with scheduling some experts and trying to do some information gathering while we go on to the, more, I guess, I hate to say easier questions, but just for lack of a better word. But also on the issue of tiered access, I think, I mean, I at least do need and would like to hear from some experts and get more information before I can really say proposal A is better than proposal B, or proposal C is the best of all, or something to that. So I think to a certain extent, feasibility will work into the equation. It will have to, or else we really won't know whether we have the best proposal or not. So I don't think we can really put one specifically before the other, but information gathering and hearing from some experts, I think, will have to happen before we can really come up with a proposal. And I think determining what the best proposal is will have to have feasibility and cost controls and things like that as part of the equation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the other things that both Marilyn and both Thomases are right in some respect. It's almost the chicken and the egg problem. But
yeah.
The issue is also that in order for any feasibility study to be done, you have to have questions to ask the experts. But in order to have questions to ask the experts, you need to have some idea of some proposals of how to move forward, because you can't just throw out the question, you know, is tiered access feasible? The answer will be yes. Depends on how you want to implement it. I mean, that'll be the answer no matter what.
Yeah.
So you need to have kind of pointed questions to ask in any kind of feasibility study.
Yeah. This is Steve. Can I get in the queue, please?
Sure. Let me, Jordan was first and then Steve.
Yeah, I actually snuck in there via IM, Steve. Sorry about that. I think that just to echo what Jeff said, I think that we do, it's not that we need to study feasibility before a proposal or study a proposal before feasibility, but I think that in all of these issues, tiered access in particular seems a little bit more complicated perhaps than some of the other issues, but maybe I'm just not appreciating the legal nuance of the other two. But it seems to me that on all three issues, we need to start to consider a strategy for doing the work and, you know, start to talk about the issues, identify questions to refer to experts, and direct those questions to the experts, as opposed to sort of trying to preconceive what the advice we might get from the experts would be at this early stage without having really considered the full range of issues that we might need advice upon. So I think most likely we're going to need to do at least some initial work in the field, in the area of tiered access, in order to determine even what questions are appropriate to refer to experts and how to phrase them so that we'll get advice that we can use back.
Okay.
Steve?
I think Jordan's point really leads to mine, which is I agree that we need to have some specific questions if we're going to have people start to think about this. And I think one of these questions could be taken from the chart. There's a question that says, what work is required for identifying the requester? And regardless of, at least all the proposals that I've seen, all have this common feature that the public anonymous character of who is requesting would be eliminated in some cases. So that means you have to be able to identify the requester in some cases. That's an issue that may have cost implications, it may have privacy implications, it may have reliability, security implications. I think that would be a good pointed question to try to find some experts and get some input on, because I think any tiered access proposal that I've seen, anyway, has that feature. It's a common feature. And therefore, I think we're all struggling to find a way to get started on this big question of tiered access, and I would suggest that's a good place to start. I agree with Maggie's proposal that we should get to work on the other two issues, but maybe this is something where we could start casting about for experts who could help answer a specific question that's very relevant to feasibility as far as tiered access is concerned.
Can I get in queue, Tony Harris?
Yes, Tom, I would like to get in queue as well.
Paul Stahura as well.
Okay, so I got Tony, Tom, and Paul. Okay, Tony?
Yeah, I was just thinking really that access to WHOIS is you're accessing a database. And, well, normally, if there are restrictions to access a database, you have a password and a username. I don't think it's much more complicated than that. Of course, you have to determine who has the password and the username. If you look at the B2B portals, and you've got thousands out there, you can go into a B2B portal, look at commercial information, business information. When you want to get something useful, you have to be a subscriber. They'll want your password, your username, and you have to pay for that normally. So it doesn't seem to be rocket science to resolve the fact of how you would do tiered access. You've got to give some people the right of access to the information, and I think really that's the basis of it.
Okay, Tom?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I just want to kind of echo the last two speakers. First of all, I agree with Steve that the question which we really should tackle first in terms of tiered access that how you can identify a request in a way that scales, and that there are certainly experts out there who have experience with that and who can kind of give us a better idea whether that is feasible and how it might be feasible or how it is feasible. And what Tony said is right as well. There are already implementations out there, you know, and tiered access is nothing different than giving access to a certain known group. You know, you just have to define the rules by when you say whether the person is a known person. So I think we really should start at that point if we talk about tiered access and leave all the other branches to a later point.
Tom, just repeat. Do you think the first question should be how do I identify the requester?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
I mean, unless we can resolve that issue, all the other issues, whether, you know, we send out notifications immediate or after some time and all these kind of things can wait, because if we are not able to identify a person, you know, the whole tiered access model is that anyway, so it doesn't make much sense to discuss it any further.
Okay, and that's under either web-based or port 43.
Well, yes. I mean, we just have to figure out how that person can identify it and what he can use afterwards.
Yeah, theoretically, that I imagine I could use something like Iris or random protocol X. So we don't necessarily need to presuppose what the technology is. We just have a question to pose to the experts to get advice as to various ways that we might accomplish the task.
Absolutely. So if I have a look at that diagram from Barbara, I would even suggest that we move that one branch going up from summer projects included, which ends up with centralized whitelist and all that stuff, behind that question which says what work is required for identifying the requester. Because if we can do that, we can do the rest of all.
Okay. I'd add one point to that. That point is that identity is a kind of vague notion and a vague word. It's good to use it as a placeholder until this point, but before we can get into implementation analysis here, I believe we have to think about what kind of identification do we request. To give one example, for some purposes, I'm not saying that it's the right thing for WHOIS purposes. For some purposes, an email address is a perfectly valid and sufficient form of identification, and you can, of course, verify an email address by a challenge response. So I think we are once again jumping a little too fast to implementation analysis here. I would suggest that as a first step, we look at requirements that constituencies have for tiered access, so we get a defined set of requirements that can then be implemented. The second step, the rational approach, would then be a kind of reference implementation, as some would put it, And this reference implementation would say what kind of identification would actually be accepted, what data elements do we want to see, do we want collected, and can these be collected is then another question. I think we have to understand what data elements we want to collect, and we have to understand the requirements. These requirements, first, depend on what kinds of data elements go into the different tiers. So as I see it, we won't get around looking at what kind of design requirements does the system have and what kind of reference implementation could be prepared before we can go to implementability.
Can I get in line, Tony Harris, again?
Sure.
Paul, I think.
We got Paul first, then Tony.
Okay, I want to say that there's, I agree that there's sort of a chicken and an egg. I don't know who these experts are. I mean, I would guess that there's plenty of experts on the call right now, and if we can't answer some of these, I think it's going to be... I'm sure there's other experts out there, but if we can't answer, or at least start to answer some of these questions, I don't think pushing our responsibility so these other experts is going to bias much. But if we decide to go on that path, I would suggest that we formulate even more questions that are on the diagram. I don't think there's enough questions on. For example, well, I should some examples to listen. I could rattle off probably 10 other questions right now that could help us get to some solution. And I do agree that there's dependence. Like what Thomas just said, so if it's just there's dependencies and I think the diagram is useful to outline the dependencies, but I just don't think there's enough questions and branches on that.
Okay, and again, I don't think the chart was drafted as the exclusive list of questions, but just the ones we had thought of at that point in time. If when we're working on these subjects, we find more questions that need to be answered, for example, Thomas raised a couple, then that's fine. And we'll add those questions to that topic. And I think the more questions, the better.
Right. I think that's the way to make progress. We concentrated just now on asking the questions and not really on answering them, but maybe ordering them to what we think the dependencies are. Then we'd have an even better diagram that we could move forward on.
Okay, Tony Harris?
Yeah, getting back to tiered access and some basic principles, I'm trying to really get simple on this due to my limited understanding of technical legal nuances. But I think basically a system that might merit some consideration and work without too much complications would be to allow anonymous users to access WHOIS information to the extent that they can see if the name is registered, right, as a basic step. Is this name occupied by somebody? And if that is the case and they want to pursue this to any type of action because they consider their rights are being infringed or whatever, they could have access to a list of entities that are authorized, ICANN-accredited accessors to the information, for example, and channel their litigation or their investigation or whatever they want to do through one of these entities who could ask them whatever pertinent questions would be in due to make sure this is a legitimate situation and undertaking.
Okay. Anybody, Jordan?
Yeah, I actually just, in looking at this, it seems like we're starting to work the issues here a little bit, which is not really the goal of this call. It was rather to give us some direction and the work plan. But it seems to me that we have a fairly broad consensus around working the first two issues. And it seems also that at least we've got some work to identify issues to refer out to issues, or I think actually perhaps Steve's, you know, some issues around Steve's question and that Tom later clarified of how to identify the requesters, maybe a place to start and develop a list of questions for the experts on topic number three. So what I might suggest, just as to throw out there as a way to getting to a work plan that we can agree upon, is that we set up a series of additional calls after this one to get actually into the issues and maybe get some perspective on each of the issues as to what actually might be involved. But essentially to have a call on the conspicuous notice topic, have a call on the topic of the national laws and procedure to discuss with ICANN if there's a conflict with national laws, and then also have a call on the tiered access, but around this question that Steve's identified of how to identify the requester and identifying what steps, including perhaps going to outside experts, are required in order to start to get some clarity around that question.
Can I make a comment? It's Tony Harris.
Yeah, go ahead, Tony. Anyone else?
Yep. On the question of identifying who wants to access the information, my suggestion was very simple. They should have digital certificates and digitally identify themselves.
Yeah, Tony, that may be a fantastic way to do it. I don't want to resolve the issue necessarily on this call, but I want to suggest that's a worthy question to answer, because it's a predicate for all of the other work on the topic.
Okay.
I would like to just make a comment. I support our moving forward. I do think when we get into going through some of these questions, there'll be questions we have to ask ourselves, and that is, are we developing a solution that is usable by people from developing countries? So
yeah.
I'm just putting that, you know, in the back of our mind, not to deal with it now.
Sure. I think you're right. That is an important issue to grapple with.
I think a trickier question we're going to run across is not how do we identify them with certificates or whatever. That's like a technical thing. But I think a tougher question is more of a policy. Who are these people? I mean, anybody can get a digital certificate. Who is it, a law firm, or is it a company? Who are the people that are left on this white list?
And I think that is one of the things that, Paul, that we would expect to work through is who are these people, how do they prove they are who they say they are, and what criteria, if any, are they required, what steps are they required to go through, or what information are they required to provide before they're on that list.
Exactly, and what rules do they have to live by?
Right.
Yeah, and I think that gets back to Tom's sort of meta question of what is identity. You know, it's not necessarily that we want to know that they are, you know, a guy named Joe Smith, but we want to know that it's Joe Smith who also happens to be characteristic X that we think is important in terms of granting access, or not. But I think we can start to identify those sort of sub-questions around this topic as a starting point on the tiered access side. So I would just say, We may want to divide these into separate conversations, and so we can start to move ahead on all these things, identify the appropriate places in each of the topics where we may want to go to outside experts or resolve them internally.
Well, you know, is it time for us to perhaps think about how we could try to organize work that could then be... that we could try to develop work plans for each of those three areas, conspicuous notice, conflict with governments, and tiered access?
Yeah, I think that was the plan, was to figure out how we do that, divide up the work, things like that.
This is Steve. Can I get in the queue?
Sure.
Am I up?
Yes, sorry. Yes, Steve.
I think Jordan had a good suggestion. Let's take these three in this order. Let's next time talk about conspicuous notice, see how far we can, I mean, we may be able to move fairly quickly.
I think I agree with that, because if we split it to subgroup, it kind of splits up the consciousness. You know, I would want to be on probably all these subgroups. So I like the idea of doing them one call at a time in sequence while we're all talking.
Yeah, and obviously people that aren't interested in a particular topic don't need to show up for that call.
So we would do conspicuous notice, see how far we can get, and at that point decide if you need to form a task group or to find experts to come back and report, something
right,
like that.
Or just schedule a series of additional calls on the topic or whatever.
Okay.
But one of the things, and I guess this was just to bring in, unfortunately Milton's not here, I wouldn't want to say that, you know, we're going to do conspicuous notice and, you know, go until we finish that topic, however many weeks that might take. But I think it's at that next call, if we talk about conspicuous notice, it's more to develop a work plan, figure out the questions that we're going to ask, start to work on that, still have the next call on, you know, the conflict issue and the next call on tiered access, and kind of try to proceed with those on parallel paths as much as we can.
Yeah, I think the key thing is to have the next three on one of these topics. The finish line is to be nearer or more distant on different ones.
Okay. And can we, I'm going to have to drop off. Can we pick a time when we're going to do this? That it sounds, does this time work for everybody?
Hopefully that means yes.
Yeah, well, let's ask the other question. Does this time not work for anybody? I mean the time, not the day necessarily.
Well, the day and time may actually be fine if this is a slot that works on people's calendar.
I think you need to pose that question to the list because people for whom this time doesn't work aren't on the call.
Right. Good point. Thomas here. I have another question on the timing. Are we talking about just one call per week? That would mean that there would be no further work of, say, unpaid tiered access during the next 3 weeks. And I'm not sure if that's a good idea. We will, even if we don't put up subgroups formally, we will have people who are more focused on one topic and we will have people who are more focused on another topic. Could we maybe move to a higher call frequency if you're starting to split topics up onto different calls?
Maybe we could postpone that till we go through one work call on each one and then see if we need to have multiple calls per week.
The other thing I want to point out is that it might be good also, you know, we're not restricted to talking about these subjects on calls. So to the extent anyone's got questions or thoughts on these topics, you know, you're more than welcome to post them in advance. And in fact, that's actually a good idea because it'll help try to focus the conversation on those days. So it's not that, you know, week one you're only going to work on conspicuous notice on the call, and then week two you'll focus on conflict, and week three tiered access. I think we should continue the post and discuss as much as we can online to help focus the agenda for the call that's going to happen that week and the weeks to come.
So let me actually pose does anyone other than Thomas and Marilyn have thoughts as to whether we want to increase the frequency of the calls over the next few weeks to maybe two a week?
I would not want to increase the frequency of the calls. I think we can see how fast we need to progress each of these. But as far as time and date, right, the people who aren't here have to be consulted, but I'm available at this time and date, you know, the next several Tuesdays, so.
Yeah, maybe we could choose one other time slot that works for most of the people on this call, and we could throw them both on the list and see which one gathers more attention. What are people, if we had this same time slot, 11 a.m. Eastern time, on, say, Thursdays, does that work for people as well, and then we could pose both of those and see which ones stick?
Thursday's okay with me as well.
That would be 11 a.m. Eastern time in the U.S., which, of course, is other times in
other places.
I'm okay with both Tony Harris here.
Great. Is Thursday more problematic for anyone than Tuesday? Okay, so we'll send an email to the list with both of those as options and see which ones, if one works better than the other for the people that are not on this call.
Okay, so just to summarize, then we'll set up calls for the next 3 weeks, pick the days. Hopefully we'll send that out to the list. The first call being a call on conspicuous notice. Second one being one on what happens in the event of a conflict with national law. And the third one being tiered access with a focus on how to identify the requester. And just a reminder, before the calls, it would be great to have some emails sent around on initial questions that you might have that we can start the calls with.
Questions or suggestions?
Both. Either.
And actually, Paul Sahara has already posted some more questions for the decision tree. If anyone would like to continue doing that as well, I'll try to integrate them all. If it looks like we're branching off in different directions, I may save it for the actual meetings that we're scheduling to update the chart.
Great.
Okay, any other questions or thoughts? All right, I want to thank everyone for showing up to this call, and we had very good attendance level here, and I look forward to the next few calls.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, okay,
bye-bye.
Bye.